You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Save big money on your next project now at Menards. Update your home with low-maintenance vinyl windows from JELDWEN. They're durable, energy efficient, and are low maintenance. Menards carries over 100 different size and style options in stock, ready to take home today. Save big on JELDWEN windows now at Menards. And don't forget to check out our flyer on Menards.com for all the great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Welcome to the Situation Room. Welcome to the Situation Room.
Welcome to the Situation Room.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Situation Room. I'm joined by my co-host, Gabe Ferguson. I'm Jordan Coe. You guys can check us out on Twitter. He's at Gabe Fergie. I'm at Raven Sit Room. And we are here on, you know, a two-game, essentially de facto two-game lead for the Ravens in the AFC North, a 5-3 team that, you know, we wanted to see a little bit better performance from overall, Gabe. But in the big picture of things, it's hard to be terribly upset about kind of where we're placed within the division. We've seen a lot of teams that were supposed to be better this year also struggling as well. You know, and if that's the process and that's what we're going to expect, you know, you can't be too down on a team that really, you know, should have won a Giants and should have won a Dolphins game and maybe even arguably should have won a Buffalo game.
Yeah. I mean, we're here almost at the midpoint, you know, 8 games in, I guess, however you want to look at it, it's either a midpoint or next game is midpoint. So, I feel pretty good about where we are. I think, you know, a couple of the games that going into the season that we had, you know, probably considered losses have been or haven't been. I mean, I think Kansas City was probably a game that was going to be, I mean, not Kansas City, Buffalo was probably a game we're going to lose most likely. Like most people had that as a loss on the schedule. I mean, and we hung with them. That was a good game. I think, you know, it showed that these are two teams that aren't that far apart. So I think that's comforting. Obviously looking back, you'd like to have that as a win. The Ravens came out, you know, guns blazing, got that huge lead. There have been issues in the first half, but I think things are starting to get back on track. Miami Dolphins is another game where you'd obviously like to have back, but you know, having leads in the fourth quarter of all these games, like you said, these games could have all been wins. And I think that's the reason why, you know, if you look at betting markets, you look at things like DVOA, they kind of signify that the Ravens are a better team than the record based off of what they've been able to do. They've also played one of the hardest schedules up to this point. They've played a lot of good teams. I think according to DVOA, they've played the third hardest schedule through these first 8 weeks. The second half of the season is the 30th hardest schedule, so the third easiest schedule. So you're kind of going from, you know, the hard part to a softer part of the schedule, getting healthier. Let's see if this team can get rolling. You know, you have a lot of things that are changing, bringing in new players, getting players that are healthy. So I think there's a lot of potential for this team in the second half of the season.
Yeah, and, you know, I think so too. Obviously, this was a team that a lot of people considered a contender before we got into it. There have certainly been some missteps, and it hasn't gone as perfectly as we wanted it to this season. But, you know, part of the reason we waited to do this podcast until now this week was because we wanted to take a look at if the Ravens were going to make a decision that they needed to upgrade how they were looking at kind of what their future cap or future kind of draft pick valuation looked like, and what they needed to do moving forward there. And whether you think it's a splash or not, I think a lot of people would think that it is. The Ravens addressed one of maybe the two or three kind of most challenging positions on the team overall, and went out and added a guy that is, from a pedigree perspective and a draft perspective, really good. From a stat sheet and a volume perspective, also a guy that's really good, and a name that's relatively well regarded around the league. Now, it's certainly not Micah Parsons from the inside linebacker position, but I think that, what's the guy's name in San Francisco?
Fred Warner.
Yeah, Fred Warner. You know, we're not talking about like kind of that elite inside linebacker guy, but probably a guy that's in that next tier of inside linebackers in the league in terms of who's being talked about. And so in that second tier, and I think, you know, Shaq Leonard being a guy that's also in that first tier that separates himself out, I'm sure there's some guys that I'm leaving out there. But Roquan being in that second set of guys, the Ravens said this was an area that needed to be addressed. It was an area that needed some help. You know, how big of an impact do you think and before we get into him as a player, strengths and weaknesses, how big of an impact do you think this is going to be on the team?
Yeah, it's an interesting question, because I think we've said multiple times in this podcast, leading up to the season, during the season, we've kind of seen linebacker as a weakness, and potentially the biggest weakness on the team. I think that, you know, players like Malik Harrison and Patrick Queen have played better than I would expected them to. I think they have, you know, stepped up a little bit. At the same time, we've seen someone like Josh Bynes, I think, you know, on the decline, he hasn't been healthy. Bring in someone like AJ Klein, he's kind of a nothing burger. Christian Welch, he's not really somebody you want out there on defense either. So I think the Ravens have taken the approach of like throwing a lot of darts at the position and seeing what sticks. And so far, you know, aside from Patrick Queen kind of playing better, it's really been a position of weakness this season. So I can definitely see, you know, Roquan Smith as being a player that's okay. You're getting one of the better linebackers, you know, inside linebackers, middle linebackers in the NFL, and injecting him into a defense where you have that need. So from that perspective, I think it, you know, is a win for the Ravens. You know, I think they're a better team because of it. I do tend to feel a certain way about the you know, off ball linebacker position. I think it's a bit of an it's like not a very valuable position on the defense, unless you have like the elite player, like the Warners of the world, like the Parsons of the world. You know, those guys are dynamic. And those are very difficult players to find. I think, like you said, Roquan Smith is kind of a tier below that. So I think that he definitely kind of brings up another level of talent. There's definitely more speed on the field with him. I think that's something that the Ravens have lacked at times. We've seen a lot of kind of these, you know, short screen games, you know, quick passing, you know, a lot of yard after catch type of pickups used against them. And I think someone like Roquan Smith, who does have that sideline to sideline speed, and I would say is also a very good tackler, and that's something the Ravens have struggled at, especially in the open field. I think that's something that we'll see an improvement immediately in this defense. And I mean, he's not necessarily like a perfect player in all aspects, but I think he's going to be an injection of talent and injection of speed. And I think that's something that's definitely going to have its merits.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And, you know, one of the things that I was thinking about is it seemed like early in, you know, and especially in the Jets game, and kind of earlier in the season when Marcus Williams was here, the Ravens were kind of using him in a dual role. Like, he wasn't just playing kind of like that single high free safety role. He was coming down into the box, and he was a high volume tackler. He was seeing a lot of tackles and picking up a lot of action when he was in that role. Obviously, the Ravens had some real problems once they got past them into the Miami game in terms of what that looked like for them, in terms of what they were getting over the top in terms of their defense. So we saw Marcus Williams being taken out of that role a little bit. I wonder if Roquan Smith has the ability to just fill in some of the gaps. Like, there were tackles and kind of awareness plays to be made there, and Marcus Williams was making them when he was given that opportunity. The opportunity was taken away from him justifiably, and I don't think in a bad way. Now you've got a guy that could come in and potentially fill up the stat sheet in that regard. I mean, we're talking about a guy that had 17 tackles against the Ravens the last time they played him. There is really nobody on this Ravens team, except maybe Marcus Williams, that has logged that kind of number of tackles for this team in a game yet this year, and really over the last few years. And so I'm interested to see whether or not just that, I wouldn't even call that playmaking, but just that cleanup, like, security blanket ability that may be added by Roquan Smith that is not elite by any stretch of the mind, but is just kind of like filling in those gaps in that regard, could really take this defense a long way, because it just feels like a piece that's been missing.
Yeah, I think, you know, there's some aspect, you know, that you have where you're rallying to the ball and bringing that extra guy sometimes limits kind of a short gain to that could potentially go for a big gain if one or two guys miss a tackle. And having someone like Roquan Smith in there, I think, makes a difference in those situations, because he does have the speed to, you know, get to the, where the ball is. He kind of, when he sees it, he can also bring like quite the thump. You know, he's a big hitter when asked to. He's not by any means like shying away from contact. So I think in those aspects, especially on like short passes and things like that, I think that's where we're going to get the most benefit from him. You know, if we're going to dive into a little bit more about him as a player and what he brings. He does have some, you know, upside, I think, in coverage. I think especially more so than what we have on the current roster in terms of, you know, Queen and Bynes. You know, I think Queen has made some steps, but he's definitely not like an elite coverage player. You know, Roquan Smith at his best, I think, is much better than that, especially in his zone. I think he gets really good depth in his drops. He can carry, you know, the guy up the middle in like the Tampa 2 kind of defense. He's very quick to identify plays underneath him, like we talked about, like rallying to the ball. And the ability to make the tackle, you know, quick tackle and not letting up those yard after catch. I think that's his strengths. I don't think he's a great, you know, man coverage player, and that's not necessarily a knock on him. It's a really hard job for any inside linebacker to do that against, you know, some of these athletic running backs and tight ends. I don't think that's something that we've seen the linebackers in this defense asked to do very much. And, you know, Mike McDonald has been more of a zone heavy player or, you know, defensive coordinator since he's taken over. So I think that kind of is a skill set that's going to work well for the Ravens. And then in terms of run defense, this is where I probably have my biggest concerns. You know, if you look up like something like Pro Football Focus, they have him graded poorly. I took a look at some of his film, and I kind of see where that's coming from, because he's not overly physical type of run defender in terms of like attacking offensive linemen, shedding blocks. Sometimes he'll let you get on him and push you down the field. If he can sift through kind of the offensive line and get to the ball carrier, he's good. He's, you know, he's sound tackler, but sometimes he'll let you, you know, kind of be a little bit physical toward him, and he's not really willing to kind of take on that. And I think that is maybe my concern, because, you know, Patrick Queen kind of can be like that too at times. So if your run defense is two kind of undersized linebackers that aren't super aggressive and physical, I have some concerns about how that's going to fit, especially in like the sub packages where you only have like six guys in the box. That's where the Ravens have been hurt in the running game already this season by several different teams. We saw it against the Bengals. We've seen it against the Browns. We've seen it against Tampa Bay. We even saw it against the Jets. You know, we've seen it and the Dolphins. We've seen a lot of teams kind of spread the Ravens defense out and attack them by running the ball. I'm not sure that Smith really helps him there, but I think you kind of take that trade off for his ability in coverage and his ability to kind of make tackles and be sound on that. So that's kind of how I see it. You know, maybe he takes on a different personality in this defense. The Ravens are a more physical team, I think, than a lot of them out there, and that kind of has some infectiousness to it. So I'm excited to see him, you know, play. I think that speed is going to be something that's fun to watch. And I think, you know, he has some instinctiveness in the passing game that's really going to show up for the Ravens.
I'll flip the way we talk about it, talk about him and talk about run defense first and then pass defense second. I agree with you in terms of what it looks like you're seeing from Roquan Smith. I would say the distinction from him is that he's much better at mirroring the running back and staying in his run fit overall. Now, sometimes that means you get blocked. Like sometimes your run fit is the one that's going to get stuffed up and you're not going to be able to stay in your gap and you are going to get blocked. And that's going to happen to, you know, unless you are like super, super elite in terms of like who you are as a run defender. But I feel like the Ravens have seen too much of guys over pursuing past their gaps, not staying home, not making sure that they're keeping eyes on the running back. And then that's when the plays seem to get away from them, when it gets to kind of that, like, I want to call it the second level, but really like that kind of like somewhere between like the first level and like one and a half. where it just feels like nobody is in the right spot and they get away from him. So, or they get away from the defense. So I think that if he could clean that up and just muddle up some of those spots, and even if that means, you know, being blocked, but like not as clean of a lane, then there may be an opportunity for a guy like Patrick Queen, who I think plays a very different style from Roquan Smith. So I think that you're right. Neither of them are elite block shedders, but I think Patrick Queen is kind of like a speed and kind of strength kind of guy, whereas Roquan Smith is much more of like a run fit and awareness kind of guy. And I think that that potential combination could be really effective. Now, it doesn't mean that it's going to be, but I also think that there's a possibility that Roquan Smith's ability to play the run fits will be one that rubs off on Patrick Queen, in the sense that if that's how what the approach is going to look like, he's going to be able to make sure that he's getting to the right spots. They're working on it together. That solves some of those issues. Stuffing up some of those run, like those run fits, is going to allow your defensive line to make a few more tackles in the process. Maybe that helps against some of those six-man fronts that you were talking about. So it's not a guarantee overall, and there's going to be a really an early test here with the Saints, because they're going to run zone. You're going to have to be disciplined. You're going to have to not over-pursue, or Alvin Kamara is going to catch you on the backside. Taysom Hill's going to do some weird things, and you're going to have to be disciplined, and you're going to have to go get after him as well. And so, you know, luckily Roquan Smith has got some familiarity coming from the NFC, having already seen the Saints a little bit. So hopefully that's going to be helpful in terms of some of his transition. But there's a possibility that he could really add a new dimension to the run defense overall here. I think the second part of that to me is in the passing game. What I agree with kind of what you're saying. He gets good depth on his drops. He seems to have great awareness, really good kind of getting the drop and then coming downhill to the ball carrier and making the tackle. But what I also really like about him is he's got really, for a guy of his size, really good hip fluidity and a good understanding of when he needs to turn his hips and using those as kind of like mirroring whoever he's covering or whoever has the ball to do that in the process. And then using that strength to kind of explode to the ball carrier and use that as ability to make those tackles. So again, I think that just his ability to be a cleanup guy for a defense that hasn't had a cleanup inside linebacker from a tackling perspective in quite some time could end up making a really big difference, or we find out it makes no difference at all. So I'm pretty interested to see, you know, whether or not it ends up being kind of the right fit. And at the end of the day, I think that's what Roquan Smith is waiting for too. That's why he says he doesn't, you know, he's not going to try and sign an extension right away. He wants to see if, you know, the way that the Ravens want to use him fits well in terms of his style and what he wants to do as an inside linebacker. And if he does, you know, maybe you can get him at a better value, and he's a guy that the Ravens ultimately end up keeping, you know, instead of Patrick Queen.
Yeah, and I don't even know if it necessarily has to be. I guess it probably has to be instead of Patrick Queen, because you're not gonna pay two inside linebackers, you know, probably high end contracts for the position. It's an interesting thing to consider the compensation in this, because, you know, a second and a fifth, I mean, for a rental, it's kind of on the steep side. I know he's a really good player, you know, all pro pedigree. It's a interesting, you know, question as to how the Ravens thought about that. Do they think it's someone they bring in and they want to try and extend, or is it just a guy we felt like the price is right, it's enough to kind of put us over the top of this defense? And I think they're probably looking more at this season and saying this is a piece that we need. And you know, If it took this much, that's part of the price tag when you get somebody basically for free in terms of the cap space, because the Bears ate the entire cap aside from like the weekly game checks, and the Ravens gave them back AJ Klein. So like they're basically being charged, like, I think that's a total of like $100K against the cap in the transaction. So from that perspective, it's definitely a win for the Ravens. You know, having still that small amount of wiggle room in order to make some moves if they have to in terms of picking up players, or, you know, whatever last minute moves they might have to make. So I think there's definitely some good things that can come out of this. You know, losing that second round pick next year stings a little bit, but you know, if they potentially get a compensation, you know, third round pick in the next following draft, if he ends up going in free agency, it's not quite that bad, you know, in terms of overall loss. So I think that it's really just going to come down to how much he impacts on the defense. And I think we have to wait and see, is he going to be a player that kind of transforms this defense from being like a middle of the pack team that, you know, has some good, you know, things going for it, but also, you know, has some areas of weakness. If he really fills in those areas of weakness and takes it over the top, then I think it's a trade that's worthwhile. And I think it's just a matter of, you know, we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, we as we kind of approach this podcast, thought we'd talk a little bit about some over-unders on where we think the team is going to be. You know, we got those out there on a couple polls up on Twitter. So hopefully you guys were able to participate and kind of chime in and hear us talk a little bit about where our perspectives are on that. And I think the other big question, the other area that would have been keyed on, I think the three areas that were keys for this team in terms of their weakest positions were inside linebacker, slot cornerback, and wide receiver. And the Ravens chose not to go after a wide receiver, or maybe not to go after one, but not to pay the price tag that it was going to cost to acquire one, or not willing to pay the cap space or the money that it was going to require ultimately to bring one of them in, and that would require an extension, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, obviously keeping an eye towards whatever is going to have to happen with Lamar overall here down the road. But I think ultimately, you know, the big question is, what do we think we're going to get from the Ravens wide receiver core now that we have not changed or added anything? And we know that Rashad Bateman is going to be out at least for the Saints game and potentially maybe for a couple games more than that.
Yeah, so I was looking at, you know, some of the production for the Ravens receiving core, and if you look at the total number of receptions for the Ravens wide receivers, all wide receivers this season, it's a total of 61 through eight games. So it's not very many. you know, to put that into perspective, Cooper Kupp by himself has 64 receptions already on the season, and the Rams have had a bye week. So that's kind of where we are in terms of wide receiver production. Now, obviously, the Ravens don't pass as much as teams, most other teams, I should say. They also have, you know, Mark Andrews. He has, I think, 42 receptions. So, you know, they do, like, it's not like they haven't been passing at all. I think Isaiah Likely at 18 receptions would be, like, the second most targeted, you know, wide receiver on the team. So that's kind of where we are in terms of, like, how the Ravens distribute the ball. Now, I put the number for over-under in the second half at 70 receptions. So that would put a total of 131 receptions for all Ravens wide receivers at the end of the season. And right now we're at 61. So do you think 70 receptions will go to the wide receivers? It's basically taking the current pace that they're at and projecting it out. So what do you think about that?
I'm taking the under. I think that we saw in the second half of the Tampa Bay game what the Ravens want to do on offense for this year. And I think it can work. I think if they can run the ball effectively from like that format overall, then they're going to find a lot of success on the ground. They're going to use that to set up play action. They're going to be a little bit more under center. They're going to run the ball a little bit more out of zone schemes to let Linderbaum be an effective lead blocker. If all those things add up, then we're looking at, you know, you're looking at less wide receiver receptions to be available overall.
So I agree with that logic, but I'm actually going to take the over, and that's only because Mark Andrews is out. And I think that some of those targets are going to go to some of the receivers in the next couple of weeks. And we don't know how long Andrews is out for. Nobody has said anything from the Ravens side other than it's like not a major injury. That's John Harbaugh's words, and you know how he likes to give so much detail about injuries. Most people have said it looks like an AC joint sprain. Mark Andrews seems like a tough guy. I could see him actually just missing one game, potentially, and coming back after the bye. But, you know, they also might want to take it easy with him. You know, he is a pretty important part of the offense, and the Ravens' schedule is actually pretty easy for the next, like, month or so. So, like, maybe you could, you know, let him get, like, 4 weeks and just let him completely heal up. So, in the end, I think it's going to be just, you know, they're going to take it slow with him and not put him back out there when he's injured. So I think you might get a little bit more. We saw in this past game against Tampa Bay, we actually saw a little bit more 11 personnel than we'd seen throughout the season. Not a lot, a huge amount, but we did see it a little bit, especially in the first half. I kind of like that. That spreading out the defense a little bit allows you to run. You know, we talked about this before. Allows you to run into boxes that aren't heavy. And we did see some good runs against heavy boxes. We also saw some good runs against light boxes. So I think that's a tendency that I'd like to continue to see. You know, you can't always be running out of spread, but I think just having that option gives you, you know, a few more, you know, plays in your playbook, so to speak. So I think what we saw from Greg Roman in that second half of the Tampa Bay game was really good. You know, he did a lot of things, a lot more motion than I think we saw the week before against Cleveland. a little bit more diversity in personnel and formation. We saw the jet sweeps to Devin Duvernay. We saw more zone, wide zone, like we've talked about, to kind of get Linderbaum involved. So I think that's where this team is at its best, when it's using RPOs, using play action, using motions. That's how you make the job easier for the offense. And I think that's what we all want to see. You have one of the most dynamic players under center. You don't necessarily have to have the most elite weapons around them, because he makes it all better, especially with the way the offensive line is playing. You lean on Lamar, you lean on the offensive line, and you kind of try to keep defenses honest by throwing different looks at them and using, different kind of, whether it's play action or RPO, and keeping them off balance. And that's how you put together, continuous offensive drives. You rip off a couple of long runs, and all of a sudden you're in scoring territory. So I think I have a good feeling for the Ravens in the second half in terms of their offense. It doesn't have to be wide receiver centric. It's obviously going to be a lot of running game, like you talked about. But I do think there might be an increase in targets a little bit, just because it's been so low in the first half. And, even with Bateman out, we've seen guys like Duvernay step up. He leads the wide receivers in targets. I think DeMarcus Robinson has played well, so I think there's upside there. So that's kind of how I'm seeing it. I'm hoping that, they don't completely abandon the wide receiver position in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, so if you go back and look at what the offense looked like in 2019, you're looking at about 7 catches a game for wide receivers overall as well, which puts you at the under by almost 7 catches, or a game's worth of catches. Because if there are 9 games left, that's 63 catches for your over-under. That's a happy place for the Ravens to live, and a safe place for them to live, a comfortable place for Greg Roman to call the plays. I mean, at the end of the day, you might have been happier to see more 11 personnel, and I personally would like to see more 11 personnel as well out of this team, because I think they can do more with it. I think Greg Roman cannot call an effective offense out of 11 personnel. You look at the first half of what the Ravens did in Tampa last week, and it was just a total, absolutely nightmare mess. Like the reads, the routes, the combos, everything that they were just trying to set up and do just seemed to make absolutely no sense, have no rhyme, no rhythm, no approach, no strategy that were going to be ones that were effective. And if that's the starting point of what we have to work with, I do what works. And if Gus Edwards is going to come back and look as good as he has so far and continue to perform from what we've seen from him, if Isaiah Likely is going to continue to grow and be more of a threat and be able to take some of that pressure off of Mark Andrews and do it that way, I just think that I think that there is a very like or there's a more than reasonable potential that they can find their way back into that 2019 style groove. And the thing that jumped out to me the most in the Tampa game in that regard was in the fourth quarter, when they needed to kind of run out the clock, the Ravens were still running the ball and doing so effectively. There was the big run from Kenyon Drake, running the ball, doing so effectively, even though Tampa knew that that's what they were going to do, and even though they knew that it was coming. I think the other piece that, and I've said this a few times on the podcast so far this year, is that I think that the Ravens have been holding Lamar Jackson back in terms of what they've asked him to do as a runner as well. And I think that if you want to have an effective running game, Lamar Jackson has to be a legitimate threat to those teams. I think that in the Cleveland game, we saw Lamar Jackson just, Cleveland didn't seem to be taking him seriously as a running threat, and the Ravens didn't seem to be employing him as a running threat legitimately in the kind of the first half and really into the third quarter of that game. Are you going to open that piece of the playbook up? Are you going to give Lamar some of those options? Are you going to let him do some more of that reading, keep some of the ball, and move the ball forward? Because once they started to do that in the second half, like we saw a couple big runs from Lamar Jackson in the third quarter against Tampa, and then everything just opened up after that. I want Lamar to be healthy. I want them to protect him. But if you're going to lean heavy into the run, you've got to do the things that are going to open up the running game in other places for you, and that's letting Lamar Jackson do the read option, run QB power, and make some decisions on his own and break teams with his legs, because they know that it's the hardest play in football to stop right now.
Yeah, and the first play of the second half was the long run Lamar had, the first Ravens play. He had, a 30-yarder. It was just perfectly well executed, and he made a couple guys miss, I think probably 3 or 4 guys miss. And he's just so hard to bring down in the open field. So I agree with you. I think Lamar has to be a featured in the offense. It doesn't mean he has to run the ball, you know, 15 or 20 times, but I think there's a sweet spot of like maybe like, you know, 7, 8, 9 runs per game that keep defenses honest. If he can rip off, you know, 8 to 10 yards on those runs, maybe break one for a touchdown. We've seen him do that plenty of times in the past. I think that's where this offense is at its best. I think it allows the running backs more, you know, wiggle room and more room because, you know, the defenders don't crash on them quite so aggressively. So, and then also I would say, I still want to see Devin Duvernay get those motion looks. Like, even if he's not getting the ball, that speed to threaten, you know, horizontally is something that this team really needs. And maybe you can use Justice Hill a little bit like that as well, but Duvernay is probably the best option on the team to do that. He's proven that he's capable. And he's someone, and I guess that doesn't really count as a reception for a wide receiver, unless it's a pop pass. So I'll take that if it is, but it's getting your wide receiver, your playmaker involved in the game. And I think that's something that when he's doing that, this offense is probably at his best.
Yeah. I mean, I definitely agree. I mean, and hopefully J.K. Dobbins is a guy that comes back and is healthy, also allows them to stretch that stretch teams laterally. You know, the Ravens just need to be willing to kind of do that, to stretch teams both kind of vertically and horizontally in terms of the run game. And we saw Linderbaum look really, really good. I'll bring him up again. Obviously, he was highlighted significantly so both during the broadcast and after the game in terms of some real highlight blocks that he put on Devin White. And so the Ravens have got to figure out a way of how to get Linderbaum in space in front of guys like Lamar Jackson and Gus Edwards and Kenyon Drake and Justice Hill. Because if they do that, those guys are going to break out some long runs in the process. And those are the backbreaking ones for these teams overall, because you've got a guy like Justin Tucker. If you can get it over the 40-yard line, you can put up points. The Ravens are just going to be a really challenging team to beat. And you think about why they're going to be a challenging team to beat. We'll kind of move on here from the offense and the wide receivers a little bit. But part of that is also this defense, right? We've seen them add Roquan Smith, but we are now finally at that point where it feels like the reinforcements that we were promised are about to arrive in terms of the defense. Justin Houston is back and has looked fantastic in that process. Pierre Paul, as he's getting his legs underneath him and kind of getting up to game speed, has given you a couple flashes in moments in terms of what he's given you. You're going to have Owe has looked great in terms of the rush. He's being held constantly, doing really good things. And now you've got Tyus Bowser and David Ajabo coming out of practice, being ready to come in, contribute, and play. And you've seen really good play from the defensive line. Travis Jones throwing people around like a rag doll. Broderick Washington playing exceptionally well. Calais Campbell was, you know, out with an injury this past week. The defensive line did not seem to miss a beat. Justin Madubuike has 2 or 3 exceptional splash plays every game. This is a group that can get after the passer, and quite frankly has gotten after the passer. They have 23 sacks on the year. I think that's 5th overall in the league, and that is without some of these reinforcements that we've talked about, learning a new scheme and trying to kind of get adjusted to some of the pieces that they're bringing on board as well. And so to me, you know, that's a big question. Is this, especially if this is a team that is going to have a double-digit lead, which it seems like they're more than capable of doing and have done a few times this year already, can they get after the quarterback when the other teams are trying to throw the ball and continue to ramp up those sacks? And so, you know, if we set over the similar pace, we set an over-under at 26 sacks for the year, or for the second half in the remaining 9 games, you think the Ravens are going to be over or under that 26 sack total?
So I think they have a chance to be over. And that may seem like aggressive, but I didn't think the Ravens would be sitting at 23 sacks through 8 games either. And, you know, for all of the complaints that we kind of see on Twitter about the lack of the Ravens pass rush, and I think on a per play basis, it hasn't been as dominant as, you know, anybody would want to see, but it has been good enough, I think. And they're still in the top, like 5 or 6 in the league in terms of sack number. We've seen in the past, you know, maybe the Ravens have gotten more pressure on a per play basis, but they haven't been getting the sacks. You know, sacks are the plays that actually really put a defense in a better position. Like you're losing yardage. Like that matters. Like, yes, I mean, pressure affecting the quarterback, that also matters. So like, obviously anytime you can, you know, affect a play, it's important, but like the sack is the one that really, you know, gets you off the field a lot of the time. So I think, you know, being able to finish, like, you know, Justin Houston had, I think, like 3.5 sacks last year, 4.5 sacks, maybe more than that. I don't know. It wasn't very many, but he was constantly, like, kind of in the backfield. he's converting them this year. So I don't know if that's just kind of like luck, you know, maybe it might also help. I think the back end scheme, I don't want to take too much time talking about that, but like playing a zone in the back as opposed to playing man actually allows your pass rush more time to get home, because the openings aren't always there quickly. And if they aren't there, then the quarterback is forced to take an extra half second to kind of find the open receiver. And that sometimes allows the pass rush to get home. So that kind of change and going from like a blitz heavy kind of Wink Martindale 5-6 guys where you're either getting there quickly or not getting there at all. But there is generally an open receiver if the quarterback can find him, or versus this, you know, bring four or maybe do like kind of like a fire zone, you know, where you're bringing guys overloaded on one side, but still like kind of taking up a couple passing lanes with like their defensive line dropping or whatever it may be. I think it's just a more pass rush friendly defense that the Ravens are playing in. And now that you have someone like Tyus Bowser coming back, who can really be that kind of dual threat, who can actually be an extremely effective dropper in coverage, that's going to help the Ravens out a lot, in addition to Roquan Smith, obviously. And then, you know, having someone like Ajabo, who we haven't seen, but, you know, he is familiar with this defense. He played in Mike McDonald's defense in Michigan last year. So I think I saw a quote from him today. Says he knows the playbook. Like, he knows the scheme. He just has to get out there. And it might be a week before we see him out there. It wouldn't surprise me if he's inactive. You know, his injury was a little earlier than Bowser's was. I mean, they had to activate them to their active roster because they had their three-week window. So he might be active. He might not be. But if you have, you know, a rotation of five guys on the edge, instead of having to bring up your Kennards and your Copelands and your Means and whoever this kind of like poo-poo platter or Eric Harrison, like guys who are really not like ideal players, and you're having to give them snaps and you're having to put Owe out there for like 80% of the snaps, getting them on more of a rotation, getting them out there in a place where they're more suited to, you know, actually pin their ears back and get after the quarterback. This is potentially going to be one of the better defensive fronts in the NFL. Combine that with, you know, your top cover guys like Peters and Humphrey on the outside, and this is potentially one of the, you know, better defenses in the NFL. And I think that's something that's really exciting to look forward to.
Yeah, I genuinely agree with you, and I think that the defense is going to be a high performing one. I taking a look at teams in terms of sacks allowed. The bottom nine of the teams the Ravens are playing left on the schedule of the nine, they get the Bengals once, who are second worst. They get the Broncos, who are sixth worst. They get the Steelers twice, who are eighth worst. And they get the Panthers, who are ninth worst. The Falcons are like 13th worst. And so that's a big chunk of the games. The other three games, the Browns, the Saints, and the Jags, are actually pretty high up in terms of sacks allowed. And I think part of that is just their scheme and getting the ball out. Who knows what the Browns will look like when Deshaun Watson comes back. That game could be a little bit of a nightmare for them as they're trying to kind of get all meshed up and back together. So it's a bit of a wild card. But I would say with that kind of scope of bad offensive lines, and especially with the Steelers game kind of looming, that there's some anticipation that ultimately the over in terms of sacks are going to be there. And I like the upside of this defense and what they're going to be able to do. And hopefully... Again, hopefully the cleanup from Roquan Smith is the difference maker in terms of what's happening on the offense. And maybe if that's the case, it ends up actually being that we get less sacks because there are fewer plays and fewer drives and the team is kind of on the field a little bit less. Because we've seen some of these kind of like third and six, seven, eight, nines get converted for first downs in kind of like ugly ways. And if the Ravens can clean some of those up in the process, they're going to ideally see a few less sacks in that process as well. So the talent is there, though, and they look good. And it really begs the question of who this team really is overall. You know, are these who is this Ravens team, right? 5-3 is not all that thrilling of a record, but the games that they've lost have been close overall. And if you look at some of these advanced metrics that we've seen, you know, and if you buy into those, and, you know, whether you do or whether you don't is kind of here nor there. Let's talk a little bit about DVOA, because the Ravens have a very good DVOA overall. I think as a team, are they fourth? Is that where they are now, or third?
It depends on how you look at the weightedness, but it's like either third or fourth. They're definitely like, when you look at just kind of like play by play, and the important part about this is the weighted part, because you're looking at and defense adjusted. So you're basing it off how other teams are playing other teams. So, you know, that's taking like basically the Ravens' schedule into consideration. They've played some good teams, good defensive teams, but good offensive teams. So that is factored into how, why the Ravens are so high, because, you know, they've been in these games. Like, they've played well for the most part. They have had these, like, kind of mini collapses in several games that lead to losses, but still over, like, you know, three quarters of these games, or over two quarters, they look really good. And then, like, yeah, they haven't really put together that full game yet. And that's something that's interesting to me as well, because they really haven't had a full game performance yet in all facets. Like, they haven't had their best performance. So that's something that's interesting to think about. You know, this is still a team that's kind of figuring things out both offensively and defensively. The one thing they've been steady at is special teams. I think, obviously, you know, Justin Tucker, he's the GOAT. You know, he's the best that's ever done it. I've had some complaints about Jordan Stout, but I feel like he's improved over the course of the season. He had a few punts earlier on that were kind of like, I don't know what we spent a fourth round pick on, but we've seen him boom a few, and he's done a better job, I think, of pinning teams. So I'll give him credit. He's obviously been great as a holder as well. So I'm happy with that. And then, you know, I think the coverage has generally been pretty good. You know, Devin Duvernay on returns has done great. We've got a touchdown out of him on a kick return. And he's been, you know, when given space and punt returns, he's been, you know, electric in that as well. So I think, you know, all around, you know, the Ravens are a very well-rounded team. So I was looking at breaking it down between offense and defense. So this was a little bit surprising to me, because I know that early on the Ravens were, you know, very good on offense, like explosive plays, but that kind of went away. But still, on a play-by-play basis, they're second-rated offense by DVOA. So my question, do you think by the end of the season they'll be in the top five? Now, if we think about 2019, they were like the first offense by like a country mile. It was a massive difference between them and their team. They were one of the historically best offenses ever by that metric, by many metrics. So you think this season, all the things we talked about, you know, lack of wide receivers, but, you know, Lamar, the rest of the running game, you think top five is reasonable?
Yeah, I don't see any reason why it shouldn't hold the level that it's at, unless the Ravens continue to kind of like get in their heads about play calling. If they can figure out the balance of what they want to do with the running game, they can narrow, like, you don't have to let Lamar throw the ball 30 times a game to showcase his arm, right? Like, showcase his arm in the right places, in the right ways, in a timely fashion, and he's going to light it up in those instances. So getting back to those basics, I think that it's going to be there. And at the end of the day, I think it's the schedule that aids a lot of that. You've got a pretty easy schedule overall here. They're going to New Orleans against kind of like a mediocre-ish defense. They're, you know, maybe top third in the league, but maybe, you know, by some other metrics is half in the league. They're going to light up the Panthers. I think that, you know, there are a couple decent defenses down the stretch here, you know, but I think overall, I expect the Ravens to continue this performance. The other piece to me is that the running game is back, the running, you know, how that those parts have come together. And there have just been, I don't know, maybe five or six plays this year that should have been like 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 yard plays, touchdowns that like just didn't quite happen. And so like we've seen a bunch of times that people have kind of like just tripped over the other guy's foot that's blocking in front of him. Lamar's gotten taken down by the shoelaces like twice. Like Lamar should have scored on that toss play from Mark Andrews as an example, where he just went down. I can think of like three or four other plays where guys just kind of like got their feet tangled up, should have been touchdowns. And so I think if that continues to be the trend, I see no reason why this offense would regress. And I don't see any offense that should be kind of breathing down the neck of the Ravens that's going to pass them in that process.
Yeah. And I mean, we can have the same conversation on the defensive side of the ball. You know, they've had more struggles, I think, defensively than offensively this year. Especially, you know, a few games come to mind, you know, the Miami game. They really, you know, just kind of got lit up in that one. They haven't been, aside from that, like really kind of like crushed by anybody. But they've had, you know, these kind of moments where they just give up a drive or back-to-back drives where they look like they just can't stop anything. And that's been frustrating. So there's been a little bit of lack of consistency. And I think that's kind of reason why the DVO, I think their DVOA, they're 17th right now. And they started out really low. So they're actually ascending. They're getting better. But I'm thinking, you know, if they're in the top 12 by the end of the season, I'll be pretty happy. I think there's a chance they could even, you know, get into like more of like the top five to top eight range. If you know, this like Roquan Smith kind of situation goes well, obviously, with the other guys we talked about. But I think if they're a top five offense and a top 12 defense and still continue to be like a top one or two special teams, that's a pretty good place to be. So what do you think? Top 12 defense, you expect them to get to there?
Yeah, I do, especially with the kind of the reinforcements coming back. I mean, if Marcus Williams comes back late in the year, as we expect, Roquan Smith is even just kind of like the baseline of what we expect from him and not more, that there is upside beyond that. If Tyus Bowser and his ability to play the Sam and kind of take away some of the bad snaps, not bad snaps, but like asking Malik Harrison to do more than some of the things that he's capable of, asking Oweh to not be in position in those instances, not giving the rest to Justin Houston and Jason Pierre-Paul, you know, especially now that we're seeing Travis Jones get healthy. I mean, I can only imagine this defensive rotation if Michael Pierce was ultimately ended up staying healthy. So, you know, slot corner is the spot that worries me, but I'd be more than happy to push Marlon Humphrey into the slot. It's not always going to happen, but he should be following top end receivers into the slot. So like if they're the Jamar Chase is moving into the slot during the Cincinnati game, Godwin is a very good player. So that's why Marlon Humphrey goes into the slot. Like if they're if the third receiver on the other team is not an elite guy, you know, let's stay with Pepe Williams. Let's stay with Brandon Stevens. Let's see how that works out. If that's the place that they're trying to abuse and get after the team, move Marlon Humphrey inside and your kind of weakness there goes away to some degree. So, and not a lot of teams have three great wide receivers, to be honest. So I think there's upside in this defense too. I think five spots is, you know, not a huge ask for this team overall. And when you think about what that looks like, that's basically kind of switching from, you know, a 2%, you know, giveaway to a 2% takeaway in how DVOA values these kind of things. And it shouldn't take long. It should only be a couple really good games from this defense to move up the ranks.
Yeah. I think there's an interesting, I was looking at some charting for Marlon Humphrey, because you mentioned the slot corner, and he's had a couple games where he has played more in the slot. So week one, he played a lot in the slot, like 30 snaps. And then week three, he played almost half the snaps in the slot. And this past week against Tampa Bay, he played about a third of them in the slot. So I think there is, depending on game plan, you know, an idea to get him in there. And maybe it's partially because it just looks at, you know, we're looking at who's available on the other side of the ball. Like what are the wide receivers they're playing against? What's the matchup looking like? In some instances, you want to put Humphrey in the slot. I think you can kind of follow if one of your best receivers in the slot. Like in this past week, Chris Godwin, he plays a lot in the slot. So it makes sense to put Humphrey over him and let someone like Brandon Stevens play on the outside. So I think, you know, it might just be a weekly kind of thing, a matchup kind of thing. And we have seen a lot of Damarian Williams in the slot. We've seen some Stevens in the slot. We've seen some Ardarius Washington in the slot. So the Ravens have options, you know, depending on how they want to, you know, do it. But I think having that flexibility is good. I agree with you that to me is probably the one big question mark about who kind of steps up into that role. And maybe the answer is nobody has to step up into it. And it's just a kind of a week by week, matchup by matchup, as long as you have a good game plan and you're willing to adjust if it's not working. Like we saw against New England, you know, they made an adjustment when it wasn't working. And that kind of led to a win there. So I think that's something that is going to be important for this team, to being able to like look at what's working, what's not working, and make a change if it's needed.
Yeah, definitely. Well, it's certainly going to be interesting to watch how both sides of the ball develop. The Ravens have not hit their stride and played their best ball on either side for a full four quarters. And I am totally okay with them figuring out what that looks like over the next 2 or 3 weeks. Getting into December, you got 4 or 5 divisional games to round out the end of the year. You can win, you know, you can win all of, or is it four or is it, yeah, 4 of the last 5, because they have to play the Steelers twice. There's a chance that, you know, you run the table in those games that you're going to win the division no matter what. And even if they misstep with in one of these other games that they've got on the schedule as well, get you into the playoffs, get into a rhythm, figure out what you're going to be doing. And, you know, this is a team that's going to have a shot. It's not, Lamar's not going to win MVP this year. It's not going to be pretty in terms of the process, I think, in the end game of what it looks like. But I do think that there is a good chance that when this is all said and done, the Ravens are still considered to be a pretty serious contender once the playoffs start.
Yeah, I think the Ravens are, I mean, I think it's kind of obvious to state that they're in the driver's seat in the division right now. You know, the Bengals are 0-3 in the division. That's going to haunt them this year. And having the head-to-head loss to the Ravens, so at best they're 1-1 with the Ravens. So they basically have to have a better record than the Ravens in order to win the division. And I think the Browns are already too far behind to get there. You know, maybe not. Maybe we'll see with them. But I think it's going to be tough for both those teams to kind of, you know, really contend with the Ravens. They both have harder schedules down the stretch than the Ravens do. So I do like, you know, if you can get the number 3 seed, I think that seems likely. I don't think there's going to be a 3 seed coming out of the AFC South. I don't think any of those teams are good enough. I mean, I know the Titans technically have a better record than the Ravens do right now. They're not a better team than the Ravens. They have a negative point diff at this point. And they're kind of doing it, you know, I don't know how they're doing it, to be honest. That's kind of a schedule thing too. So, I'd like, you know, where they're at. I think, you know, there's huge, you know, upside with this team. You know, I had them at 12-5 record wise at the beginning of the season. And I think that's still within reach. I think they can, you know, be a team that only takes, you know, one or two more losses the rest of the season. Whether that puts them in the 2 seed or 3 seed, I think, you know, 1 seed is probably out of reach, but they're going to have, you know, potential to make some moves in terms of, you know, climbing up those like power rankings or however you want to look at it, and be there as a real Super Bowl contender. And then we've already seen the Bills once. You know, the Bills, you know, added a running back, but they didn't make any huge additions. So I think both these teams are looking like they're two of the top 3 teams in the AFC, and everybody else is kind of going to be scrapping for the table scraps, so to speak.
Yeah, definitely. Well, hopefully the Ravens continue to tighten things up, get in line. It's a good time to kind of have the extra day as it was related to the Thursday night game. Got a bye on the other side of that. Get healthy, get strategic, figure out what you're doing. Let's get it in line. I don't want to be talking about firing Greg Roman anymore this year. Let's hope all this stuff trends in the right direction, that Lamar kind of tightens up some of the mechanical stuff that we've seen. There are easy fixes to a lot of the things that feel like they haven't gone right for the Ravens so far this season. And so I think as a result of that, there's a really good opportunity for this team to still be really successful this year. So any closing thoughts about what you see for the Ravens for the rest of the season?
I mean, I think we've hit on most of it. I think, you know, we've talked about this kind of bigger picture thing. It's really comes down to Lamar Jackson and how well he plays. This he's really the engine of this team. Like, if he looks like he's at his peak performance and you know, playing like MVP Lamar, I think this team is as good as any team in the NFL. If Lamar Jackson is kind of at, like, you know, 75-80% Lamar, and maybe that's partially scheme and partially him, you know, not being at his best, then it's going to be kind of the ugly games we've seen so far this season. So everything kind of, you know, stems from that. I do think, you know, getting pieces back on defense will help. And if they can kind of get some of these bigger 2-score leads and hold on to them with a better defense, it's going to make the whole rest of the season look a lot cleaner and a lot more fun to watch. Especially, you know, when you start seeing some of these like 14-20 point leads that we saw back in 2019, and then letting the defense just kind of go and have fun out there, you know, really attacking opposing teams as they're having to claw their way back into a game. I think that's this Ravens team at its best. I hope we get to that point. I think they have the potential to do that, but it really does depend a lot, I think, on how well, you know, number 8 plays.
Yeah, totally agree. Well, you guys can check us out on Twitter. We'll be talking about the Ravens all through the rest of the season. Seeing if Lamar plays at that level that we need him to be at. See if the Ravens can, you know, make a serious run here into the playoffs. I think it's exciting. You know, there are exciting potential still left on the table for this team. And we're going to be excited to talk about that. So thanks for listening in. Make sure you check out our analysis. And you guys can find us. I'm at Raven Sit Room. He's at Gabe Fergie. And we hope you join us next time in the Situation Room.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5hetide.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5hetide.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.